From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov.
And I'm Annette John Hall. Today, we're talking about housing policy. And Shai, that's something the whole nation is grappling with. Even me, because I grew up in Berkeley, California, and now I can't even afford to buy a house there anymore.
Yeah, it's getting really crazy. And when advocates talk about the problems that lead to out-of-control home prices, they talk about this thing called single-family zoning, right?
Mm-hmm. That kind of zoning is really what created the suburbs as we know them.
So here's the home that cost its happy owners just $9,000. And that includes such extras as a completely equipped kitchen, a two-way fireplace, a finished room in the attic, and even a washing machine.
Now, single-family zoning doesn't just mean freestanding homes with white picket fences. It can also mean four-story row houses, like the ones going up in some Philadelphia neighborhoods.
Yep. But some say that kind of zoning was also designed to keep low-income people out of certain neighborhoods. That's why Minneapolis is now the first city trying to eliminate single-family zoning, to make neighborhoods more equitable and to keep prices low.
Zoning for single-family homes citywide would change to allow up to four units to be built, or fourplexes.
With Philadelphia real estate booming, some see a looming affordability crisis in some neighborhoods. Is eliminating single-family zoning the answer?
Today's show, Zoning the American Dream.
Plan Philly reporter Jake Blumgard covers housing. He's here to help us understand why Philadelphia is taking the opposite approach to Minneapolis.
Jake, recently the Minneapolis City Council voted for a plan that would eliminate single-family zoning in their city. What does that mean exactly? Does that mean that you could build a triplex anywhere you want to?
Yes, that's exactly what it means. They're in the process of adopting this new code that would basically allow anywhere in the city where you can build housing, you can build the kind of base level is a triplex instead of a single family home. It doesn't mean they couldn't build a single family home. It just means they could also build a triplex on that lot. It gives the developers more options of the types of housing that could be built.
And why did they do that?
So in Minneapolis recently, housing prices have been getting higher and higher because more people have been moving to the city. About 75% of the population lives in these areas zoned for single family, and there's just not any new houses being added there. And so when you have more and more people wanting to live in a city and not enough houses being built, they get more expensive. The other thing I should say is that in Minneapolis, they really framed this zoning reform in terms of racial justice. They were kind of really focused on the fact that in that city, most homeowners are white, and they wanted to rezone the city to allow more smaller, cheaper housing units to make it more accessible for non-white people in Minneapolis who, on average, have lower incomes. Opponents of this idea basically think this is just a giveaway to the real estate industry. They think this isn't actually going to like lower the cost of housing. They're just like, look, now the developers will be able to build more homes that won't actually be affordable. You have this very specific idea of what the American dream looks like, and for a lot of people, triplexes don't enter into it.
This idea has been debated nationwide, Jake, this idea of single-family zoning. And some say a move like this could happen in Philadelphia. How could this work, or would it work in Philadelphia?
Minneapolis and Philadelphia are not very similar. In Minneapolis, you have a lot of these neighborhoods inside the city that look like they're in the suburbs. You have all these distinct houses on separate lots that basically mean you can only have like 8 or 10 houses on a block. Whereas in Philadelphia, you have row houses. A greater proportion of Philadelphia's housing stock is row houses than any other American city. And row houses by nature are very dense. So you can have these single family neighborhoods that actually have the kind of like levels of density that Minneapolis wants from triplexes already baked into the architecture.
And why is Philadelphia's housing stock like that? How did that come about?
There's a couple things here. Philly was really a factory town.
After the years of the little pioneer village, years of growth to this center of defense and industry. Side by side, the houses spread out over the flat valley.
And row houses were often built as a means of worker housing, kind of cheap worker housing. And then also, it's important to note that Philadelphia really emerged as a city before zoning went into effect. In Philly, a lot of the architecture in the neighborhoods that we love basically emerged prior to all these land use restrictions.
When you bring up an idea like this to politicians in Philadelphia, what do they say?
Generally, they have a pretty negative reaction to it.
Just because I represent a working class community, you're telling me that they don't have a right to achieve the American dream and to own a single family home? I'm not buying it.
When I talked to Councilwoman Sherelle Parker, who oversees a lot of these neighborhoods that are kind of in the northwest, the upper north part of the city, it's still row houses, but less dense than you might find in the neighborhoods of North Philadelphia and South Philadelphia. She highlighted that in Philadelphia, we have a very high home ownership rate for a large American city.
The home ownership rate in the city of Philadelphia is at approximately 52%. In the 9th Councilmatic District, our overall rate is 63%.
Then we also have higher levels of minority home ownership than in most other cities. She doesn't see the kind of price pressure that we're seeing in Center City and the neighborhoods around it. For her, the principal concern is preserving the value of the homes as they exist now. And for her, multifamily zoning could threaten the value of her constituents' homes.
How do residents react when you kind of bring this up to them?
So I talked to Diane Richardson,
the block captain and a committee person in the 50th Ward, 15th Division,
who is a resident of Mount Airy. She's involved in her community. She lives in a brick row house that she bought in the 1970s.
So this is our dining room area. Of course, that's the kitchen. Originally, this was a wall that came across.
And she is also very skeptical of this idea.
You know, our home is our bank.
For her, moving to this neighborhood, this was kind of a move up into the middle class for her family.
I bought this house at $25,000. My house is worth almost $200,000. So I do have an investment.
Like, even if the city of Philadelphia shouldn't be getting rid of single-family zoning overall, mostly just because there isn't the need to, there are a lot of neighborhoods that are seeing surging prices. And zoning those neighborhoods for multifamily would be positive, because the whole thing is, if you have a neighborhood like Point Breeze that is zoned for single family only, and you have all these houses going up that are $500,000, then somebody who can't afford that, they're just going to go like to the next neighborhood in line. And so then the housing in that neighborhood starts getting more expensive. And there's this kind of chain reaction that housing experts warn is a huge side effect of single-family zoning. One of those experts is Penn Housing Professor Vincent Reyna. We spent an afternoon walking around the city looking at the housing stock.
You have people who are vested in their properties, their precedent values. They're vested in the type of neighborhood that they bought into. They rationally are going to do all they can do to protect the status quo, but by virtue of doing that, it's going to exclude people.
He helped the city of Philadelphia draft its housing action plan. And one of the things that the housing action plan calls for is for zoning multifamily in the city's hot neighborhoods and the neighborhoods that are likely to become the hot neighborhoods next.
The diversity of the housing stock is a wonderful thing. It's a reflection of preferences. It's a reflection of change over time and a city changing over time. And it's important for a certain level of nimbleness for a city to actually evolve.
So can that kind of move, eliminating single family zoning in a dense, hot neighborhood, prevent a situation like San Francisco and Berkeley from happening, where home prices are just out of reach for all but the most wealthy?
Especially in a city like this one, most housing experts say that it could.
Once an area becomes a high-cost area that's single-family zoned, it's hard to go back. The city's in a nice position now to think constructively and creatively about how to create a prosperous and equitable city before it becomes the next New York or San Francisco or LA.
Jake, what's Philadelphia's approach to zoning?
So Philadelphia is basically doing the exact opposite of what most housing experts think that we should be doing. Housing experts would really like us to get rid of single-family zoning in the neighborhoods around Center City, to kind of allow more apartments and smaller housing units in these areas where there's a lot of demand for housing. The other thing that's important to emphasize here is that zoning is something that is 100% in the control of local politicians. Zoning is a kind of housing policy that allows local politicians to set the base rules for what kind of housing is allowed to be built.
Okay, Jake, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Jake.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And that's it for the show. The Y is produced by me and Shai Ben-Yaakov, along with Alex Stern and Kelsey Hansen, with editorial direction from Katie Colinari and editing on today's show from Eugene San.
Got a comment on anything you've heard? Tweet us at Shai Ben-Yaakov, at Annette J.H., or at Alex Ray Stern.
This note, in yesterday's show about the Philadelphia Orchestra's relationship with China, we misidentified Roberto Diaz, president of the Curtis Institute of Music. We apologize for the error. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review.
We'll be back tomorrow.